Get relief now.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, I was hoping I'd be able to come in today and have some lighter things to talk about. It was a heavy week last week. We had some really amazing testimonies, some amazing guests from Joshua Broom on Wednesday, who was the former porn star and now leading people to Christ. One of the most remarkable turnaround salvation stories I've ever heard. And obviously, we had to be careful as we went down that road, and Josh shared his story last Wednesday. Then on Friday, Victor Marks called in from just outside of Mosul, Iraq. He's over there, a great Christian man of God, and a dangerous dude too, as well. I have a friend that is over there for a few months, helping him out, rescuing widows and children. And Victor called in for a little bit live from Iraq on Friday. So if you missed those things, please go to the website. You can either check it out at the website. You can get the podcast, or you can subscribe to iTunes. That's all free. And you get the podcast just comes through your regular podcast. If you have an app on your phone like I do, iTunes, whatever, you can get the podcast that way. Or you can go to the website and grab it there. C2atoday.com is the website. Or on Facebook, which I have a favor to ask of you today. On Facebook, we are at facebook.com/C2A Radio, the letter C, the number 2, the letter A, as in called to action, C2A Radio. There on Facebook, and you can watch the Facebook Lives. We're doing Facebook Live right now, and here's my favor to ask of you. Tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, which will be Tuesday, July 18th, at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I'm having an upper endoscopy performed. They have to knock me out for that, and they'll put the scope down my throat, down into my esophagus, and even down into my stomach. To try to figure out, and I've talked about this before, what's going on with my voice. I've been my voice has been weakening over the last year and a half. It's quite difficult now to get through. I'm struggling right now just to talk to you and to do the show. And so if you can join us on Facebook, Facebook Live through the Facebook page. Again, that's facebook.com/C2A Radio. So if you've never liked the radio page on Facebook, please do that. I post there several times a day. I share a lot of stories that end up we talk about here on the show, and links to different guests and their ministries and stories. That's a very active Facebook page. And we're praising the Lord today as well, because we've been on an active campaign since January to build up and reach more people through Facebook. And we just passed 100,000 likes on the page this morning. So super excited about that. A little shout out to my buddy Leonard Goenaga, who's been helping me with that campaign to get more people access to what happens here on the show and the things that we share and what we talk about, the truth of God's word and the gospel as well, and trying to bring more of a balance to these difficult topics like we're going to talk about today, a more gospel-infused approach, if you will, to the culture war issues, to politics, and the religious right, of which I was a proud member for years, and still am a religiously right, conservative, right-leaning super. I'm about to fall off the flat earth, actually, politically. But we kind of lost, not that I would normally quote Daryl Hall and John Oates, but we lost that loving feeling. We kind of set aside discipleship, we set aside evangelism, and we kind of adopted this condescending tone of the Pharisees. And it's not biblical. So speaking the truth, absolutely bold, absolutely unapologetic, absolutely. If you listen to this show, you know I'm that. But also trying to have a more well-rounded gospel influence, understanding the lost, act like lost people for a reason. They need the Lord. They need salvation. They need rebirth. And so that's what we try to do. And Facebook has been a great opportunity to try to get that messaging out to more and more people. So appreciate you going to that page and liking it. And then that way, like when we do Facebook Live right now, we're having a notice problem. My buddy Danny's on Facebook Live right now going, okay, why didn't I get a notice? I don't know. I've been looking into it. I'm trying to figure that out. If anybody else is a Facebook Live guru, I'd love your input because it should send out a notice. And if you're looking at Facebook Live right now, there should be a subscribe button somewhere. So you get a notice when I go live on Facebook. So excited about that. But also, if you could join us on Facebook today, facebook.com/C2A Radio, my buddy David Fisher, who does our Money Monday updates from Landmark Capital, he's going to stay with us after the show is over. So we'll still be live on Facebook. And he's going to pray over me because this voice situation is potentially serious. Obviously, it's a big deal for me because of what I do, not just here on the radio, but in my role with Harvest and Harvest Crusades and my teaching. My voice is my mode of operation. I mean, it is how I produce what God has put into me. It is mainly how I provide for my family. And so it's a big deal. So if you can't join us on Facebook Live after the show is over to pray over me, I'm just asking you as my brother or sister in Christ to pray between now and 10 a.m. tomorrow and anytime tomorrow that we get a clear diagnosis of what's going on, and then a clear plan forward that I hope isn't too radical or any really bad news. So we're just trusting the Lord and trusting the doctors. So please remember that for tomorrow. And then today at the end of the show, we'll do that. Let's open with this one before we hit the break, and I'll just tee this one up because this one tees me off. And I'm sure it will as for you as well. From Fox News, Omar Khadr. Canada pays an ex-Gitmo detainee who killed a U.S. soldier, by the way, $8 million. Canada agreed to pay the former Guantanamo prisoner a reported $8 million in a lawsuit alleging civil rights violations. The settlement included an apology. The Canadian-born Khadr was 15 in 2002 when he tossed a grenade in a firefight that killed U.S. Army Sergeant First Class Christopher Spear, a Special Forces medic. Tabitha Spear, the soldier's widow, and Lane Morris, who was blinded in the firefight, won a $134 million wrongful death default judgment against Khadr 2 years ago in Utah. Of course, that wasn't going to go anywhere because the guy doesn't have the money. Lawyers for the widow and Morris requested an order freezing Khadr's assets, but last week a Canadian judge threw out the request, calling it extraordinary. So, actually, Justin Trudeau, he was he's the hipster young president up there in Canada, was just all about, hey, we got to protect civil rights up here. So that's his complaint. And they threw the guy $8 million as he claimed civil rights violations for being mistreated while he was in Guantanamo Bay. Well, why, sir, were you in Guantanamo Bay? Oh, gosh, that's right. Because you chose to become a terrorist, and you chose to throw a grenade, and you chose to kill a U.S. soldier and blind another one in his right eye. And so he doesn't like the way he's treated, and liberal progressives in Canada, of which that's like, even it seems to be even further to the left than our liberal progressives in America, throw the guy $8 million. Civil rights. Who cares about babies in the womb? It's all about quote-unquote civil rights. Back at Steve Noble. Great to be with you. It is Call to Action Radio here on the beginning of the week, which is great. Just a little reminder, just a little, I'm just coming right out and ask you to please pray for me. Tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern time on Tuesday, July 18th, I'm having an upper endoscopy done. My voice has gradually been getting weaker over the last almost 2 years now, and it's a struggle just to get through the show and just go throughout the day. I can still speak. I can raise my voice, but it's getting weaker all the time. So, and a friend of mine, Vince, on Facebook Live, facebook.com/C2A Radio, all run together if you want to find me on our Facebook page, which is awesome. We have all kinds of great interaction going on there. Just go to Facebook and hit in the search box, just put C2A Radio, all run together. The letter C, the number 2, the letter A, C2A Radio. Vince was asking if I'm going to be on the air tomorrow. Odds are I will not. I'll be, they knock you out, propofol, they'll knock me out, and I'll be out for 45 minutes or whatever. But I remember the last time back in 2013 when I had a colonoscopy and also an upper endoscopy. It took me the rest of the day to kind of get back into it. And depending on what we find out, but I'll clue you guys in again on Wednesday. I'll probably put an update on Facebook. But if you can go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/C2A Radio, the letter C, the number 2, the letter A, radio, all run together. You could join us right now on Facebook Live. And when the show's over today, we're going to pray together. My buddy David Fisher will be here in the last segment for a Money Monday update. And he's kind enough to agree to pray over me ahead of this procedure tomorrow. So hopefully we can get a diagnosis. Hopefully it won't be major. And hopefully, God willing, it'll be something that we can just get a plan of action, and start to turn the corner here with my voice. So I do cover your prayers. Okay, let's keep going here with some more of these stories. Okay, this one, I got to do these, in a certain order. So let me start here. House, meaning the House of Representatives, Congress, this is from the Washington Post last week. House rejects attempt to ban transgender surgery for troops. So, yes, you heard that right. We have been, under the Obama administration, we continue the social engineering of our military and have been paying for transgender surgeries for troops that want that. Isn't that excellent? Aren't you proud? And this is now the Trump administration has not turned this around. Okay. So I've said it all along. I'll continue to say it. I voted for Donald Trump. I pray for Donald Trump. I support him as the president of the United States, but I've fully expected that it's going to be a mixed bag all the way through, because I don't think he's really been in his whole life seriously principled ideology. I think he's done what he needed to do for his business, and then he kind of came to the conservative party movement here towards the end, later in life. So this stuff like this doesn't shock me at all, but it's disgusting that his administration is not dealing with this. So here's the story. The Republican-led House narrowly rejected a measure on Thursday last week that sought to strike an Obama-era practice of requiring the Pentagon to pay for gender transition surgeries and hormone therapy. Democrats described the proposal as bigoted, of course, unconstitutional, and cowardly, and they won the support from 24 Republican lawmakers to scuttle the amendment to the annual defense policy bill 214-209. So they were sitting here saying, hey, what are we doing paying for this stuff? This is not it's not germane to the military's operations to now invest money in somebody's gender dysphoria, their mental disorder, okay? That what's the deal with that? Representative Duncan Hunter of California said people should decide what sex they are before signing up. Quote, figure out whether you're a man or a woman before you join, Hunter said. U.S. taxpayers shouldn't have to foot the bill. So since October 1st, transgender troops have been able to receive medical care and start formally changing their gender identifications in the Pentagon's personnel system. A RAND Corporation study found that there are between 2,500 and 7,000 transgender service members in the active duty military and another 1,500 to 4,000 in the reserves. By the way, this is why it's important to do your homework. I've studied this issue, and there's lots of studies out there trying to figure out how many transgendered people are there actually in the United States. Like on the homosexual issue, a lot of people will say, this is just off the cuff. Oh, it's like 10% of the country is gay. Wrong. It's no more than 2 to 3% at best are living a homosexual lifestyle. Okay, transgender numbers are way lower than that. So the real numbers across the entire military, both enlisted and reserve, which is about 1.4, 1.5 million people, now, the real numbers is about 3,000 to 4,000 actual transgendered people in the U.S. military based on verifiable numbers, that the best as you can, of the transgender population in America. So there's social engineering and spending money for such a small group of people. And the military, by the way, is not about individuality, is it? It is not about individuality. It is about unit, cohesiveness, the squadron, your buddy that you're watching their back and they're watching yours. So there was another story that I just found in The Federalist, written by a guy named James Hassan, who is a former Army captain and a veteran from Afghanistan. Here's the title: New Army Training Tells Female Soldiers to Accept Naked Men in Their Showers. So this author in The Federalist recently received a copy of the new Tier 3 transgender training material that the U.S. Army is now using. Isn't that lovely? This is if you've been in the military, you know when you first go, it's about breaking down your individualism so that you can be a cohesive and functioning part of a team, because life and death is on the line, right? So no, not anymore. Not under liberal progressivism. It's all about the individual and your feelings, because don't forget, friends, that feelings are the new facts. So here's his story. On June 30th, hours before the policy took effect, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis postponed the opening of military enlistments to transgender people for an additional 6 months. So that's good, but they didn't change what's going on in the training. So here's from the article. The force-wide presentation, he got a handle on this presentation, right? Tier 3 transgender training in the U.S. Army. The force-wide presentation sheds quite a bit of light on the implications of the rule change on transgender service members. The policy prioritizes subjective feelings over combat readiness and inverts military order by placing the needs of the individual over the well-being of their unit. The policy allows transgender soldiers to switch their gender marker in the Army's personnel database without undergoing sex reassignment surgery or any other physical changes. Again, it's just, hey, I feel like it's a guy. God made him a guy, you're a guy. I feel like I'm a woman. So they just fill out a little paperwork, and in the military, they just switch it over. That's all. That's all it takes. From that point on, the transgender soldier is expected to adhere to all military standards associated with their gender and use the billeting, bathroom, and shower facilities of their new gender choice. For example, in the training material, Vignette 4 of the training module presents the following scenario. Following her transition from male to female, which did not include sex reassignment surgery, and gender marker change in DEERS, which is the military's personal database, a transgender soldier begins using female barracks, bathroom, and shower facilities. By the way, this is a transgender soldier, quote-unquote transgender, a man with a Audi. Okay, I'm just trying to keep it PG here. A man with an Audi. Now he can use the female barracks, the female bathroom, and the female shower facilities. Because she did not undergo a surgical change, the soldier still has male genitalia. Oh, that's a problem. How should troops respond? The training says, soldiers must accept living and working conditions that are often austere, primitive, and characterized by little or no privacy. The slide tells soldiers to understand that you may encounter individuals in barracks, bathrooms, or shower facilities with physical characteristics of the opposite sex, despite having the same gender marker in the personnel profile. That's what's happening in the Army, in the U.S. military. Mr. Trump, please, sir, bring some sanity and some unity here so that we can keep our soldiers safe. We'll be right back. Steve Noble, Call to Action Radio. Great to be with you. Well, first, we don't need to pray in school. I mean, get that stuff out of there. And then, in the 1970s, well, that's not actually a human being. It's just a clump of cells. And who cares whether it's a human being or not? It's actually the mother's right to destroy that individual, genetically distinct human being formed in the image of God right there in her belly. It's her right. So, you know, what's the big deal? Don't worry about that. Sexual anarchy ensues out of the 60s, leading us into the 70s, and then you keep going down the road, and there's just the erosion, the cultural erosion, the moral morass, the moral anarchy, and then the next thing you know, it's, who are you to say that marriage is between a man and a woman? Come on, give me a break. Marriage is whatever you want it to be. Well, no. We haven't gone that far, Steve. It's just, it can be two men or two women or a man and a woman, whatever. But no, then the next step after that, we all knew this. We talked about this for years. The whole transgender movement. And then you're going to have polyamory coming back because where do you draw the line? You draw a line now and say, well, no, three people can't get married. Well, why not? You arbitrarily said that it wasn't a man and a woman. Now it's a man and a man or a woman and a woman or a man and a woman. So now you move the line, why can't we move it again? And who are you to discriminate against us? If I love these two girls over here, or these two guys and that one girl, and they love each other, or add another one to the mix just because four is an even number, and that's nice. And who are you to say that's wrong? That's discriminatory and hateful. You are a bigot, you same-sex couple, you. See? It just everything goes out the window. That's what happens when you abandon truth. You abandon, well, what's truth? The world's crazy, right? Raise your hand. I'm raising my hand here in the studio. You can see that on Facebook Live. Raise your hand if you think the world is crazy. Yes. What is the definition of crazy or insane? Insanity. It's being out of touch with reality. You might want to write this down. What is reality? Reality is that which is absolutely, objectively true. That which is true. Well, what is truth? Well, now you sound like Pontius Pilate. Truth exists. Truth has a name. I am the way, the truth, and the life. It's truth is reality ordained by the Creator, God Himself. So everything that's outside of a biblical worldview is, in fact, by definition, insane. So back to this story about our Army and its little social experimentation with 3,000 to 4,000 transgender people who are mentally ill. Out of 1.4, 1.5, 1.6 million people, they want to wrap the whole system around them. So this is this captain that was a former captain writing in The Federalist. Here's where the rubber hits the road. Consider what these policies mean in real life. Most Army showers look like a prison cell with several shower heads on the wall. Anyone who has dealt with the practical challenges of funneling 30 people through them in 10 minutes understands that privacy will be incompatible with reality. Female soldiers who feel uncomfortable sharing facilities with individuals who still have physical characteristics of the opposite sex, otherwise known as a penis, will just have to put up with it. The adjustments to billeting are equally intrusive. Modern barracks resemble college dorms with two soldiers of the same sex, now gender marker, sharing rooms just large enough to accommodate the basic necessities of military life. The training forbids the training that the current administration is not getting rid of. Come on, Mr. Trump, please help us out here. Help reality. The training forbids any commander from ordering a transgender soldier to use a facility that is inconsistent with their gender marker, which basically means what they think they are, regardless of what their plumbing is, and rejects the idea of separate facilities for transgender soldiers. Okay, so this captain gets down here to this point. This point of the article in the Federalist, subtitled, "Bullets Don't Care About Your Feelings." Now, this is where the rubber hits the road. These are lives on the line with this progressive liberalism, anti-Christian, anti-reality mindset that's going on with so many of our leaders. This is the captain speaking. Regardless of one's opinions about bathroom bills, this policy is dangerously misguided, not because of politics or ideology, but as a matter of basic physics. Biology may be destiny, as the slogan goes, but it still matters on the battlefield. An AK-47 round travels towards a soldier at 2,330 feet per second, no matter how you self-identify. But under the current policy, you are combat ready if you self-identify as the type of person who would be combat ready. How very millennial. Of course, the new policy raises other logistical issues as well. If stability in the preferred gender does not preclude ongoing hormone therapy, will these soldiers be deployable? Should estrogen cycles be flown into remote forward operating bases with other critical medical supplies? And if these soldiers cannot deploy alongside their units, is the policy truly serving its stated goal of availing the armed services with, quote, all available talent to remain the finest fighting force the world has ever known? It's that the harassment and discrimination section of the lesson plan, this is in the U.S. Army, forbids, quote, attitudes or comments that marginalize transgender people, unquote. Heated, time-sensitive situations come with enough confusion on their own without the additional layer added by gender-neutral pronouns such as they and their. And soldiers should not have to double-clutch for fear of repercussions before speaking bluntly in such situations. The military has always been at the forefront of civil rights and equality in our society, and that should never change. But this policy is not a question of equality. It is a matter of basic safety and combat effectiveness. It asked the other 39 soldiers in a transgender soldier's platoon to potentially sacrifice their safety for one soldier's affirmation. It is the inverse of the traditional military ethos. On one of my first days in the Army, I listened to a non-commissioned officer tell a new private, "Words don't hurt, bullets hurt. So I don't give a blank about your blank feelings." Master Sergeant Wood was a veteran of the Gulf War and Operation Iraqi Freedom, a Purple Heart recipient, and had only four fingers on his right hand. He knew the truth of his statement from firsthand experience. It seems somewhere along the line, during the last 15 years of war, our political class lost track of his most basic insight. Words don't hurt. Bullets hurt. James Hassan, the author of this article, is a former Army captain and a veteran of the war in Afghanistan. So that's where this is going. It's just totally insane, this whole transgender thing. But again, look beyond it. Look beyond the innies and the outies. Look beyond gender dysphoria. Look beyond the political left. Look beyond progressivism. And look to the ultimate source of truth. Look to God's word and reality. And what it is yet another avenue for man to kill this pesky little thing known as God. We will subscribe to anything to do away with some notion of an absolute truth, because none of us, me before I'm saved, none of us like to be judged. Nobody likes to have a plumb line measured up against their life to say, you're doing this wrong, this is bad, this is immoral. In our sinful nature, we can't stand that. So we'll subscribe to anything in order to get away from even the notion of an objective truth, like your penis makes you a man. And that's... okay. Calm down, Steve. God is still on the throne. This is a minor blip on the radar screen. And one day, when Jesus comes back, this will all be dealt with. And eternal bliss waits. That's awesome. So let me finish with this one. This is from LifeSite News. On the same channel that we're talking about, this transgender thing. Teachers must keep child's transgenderism a secret from parents, Ontario school boards say. Isn't that lovely? A number of Ontario school boards have quietly implemented directives that a school not tell parents when a child asks to transition to another gender at school, even in kindergarten. Jack Fonseca, senior political strategist for Campaign Life, told LifeSite News. So you can have a 5-year-old boy or a 7-year-old girl asking a teacher about switching genders or that they want to be another gender, and the board says that the teacher can't tell the parents. What a tyrannical violation of parental rights, he says. He's, of course, correct. Worse still, it amounts to institutional child abuse on the part of schools. That is absolutely correct. My friend Walt Heyer, who's been on the show a number of times, spent 50 years dealing with his gender, had all the stuff done, all the operations. And God brought him back. God brought him back. And he works with a guy named Dr. McHugh. They've been in the Wall Street Journal. And Dr. McHugh, who runs the American Pediatrics Society, says that going down the road of gender transition, the operations, the hormones, it's child abuse. That's all it is. It is child abuse. Now, once they turn 18, okay. Now you still got a mental illness going on here. But below 18, and you do it, mom and dad, you go down that road, Brad Pitt, that kind of stuff, it's child abuse. So this is from some of the actual school board up there in Canada. This is from some of their actual policies. Quote, some students who identify as transgender are not openly so at home because of safety and or other reasons. Like, you know, you can read between the lines there because their parents are like Christians or something. A school shall not disclose a student's gender status to the student's parents or guardians without the student's explicit prior consent. Here's another one, another policy. There is no age limit on making an accommodation request, and young students have the same rights to privacy and to have accommodations made on their behalf with or without their guardian's knowledge. That's Canada. And you think, oh, well, that's Canada. No, that movement is afoot in a big way here in America. Parental rights. What's up with that? Look at Charlie Gard over in Great Britain. Now, thank the Lord, thank you, Jesus, that there's the American doctor that thinks he might be able to help is going over there to at least ascertain that. But the British government and the court system has said, sorry, parents, you don't have the right to take your child, your young boy, over to America to try some experimental things. You don't have that right. We've decided that the best thing to do for your child, the moral thing to do, is to unplug him and let him die. You don't have the right to fight for their life. We deem it unnecessary. And that's what's happening in school systems. And you think that's Canada or over the ocean? No, that's moving rapidly right here in America. Hey, listen, if we can kill 60 million babies and call it legal and a choice, don't you think we can remove parents' rights to know whether their kid is so messed up that they think they should actually change their gender? My goodness, we need revival and we need awakening. Please, Lord, come. We'll be right back.
Searching for something, something never comes, never leads to nothing, nothing satisfies, but I'm getting close, closer to the prize at the end of the rope.
Yeah, we're getting closer to the prize at the end of the road. I praise the Lord for that. And when we have to talk about, you know, enraging topics like we have today and political difficulties, financial difficulties, whether we're grieving over the loss of a loved one or just grieving over the loss of the moral sanity of our nation or whatever, I always remember we don't grieve as those who have no hope. If you're born again, if you're following Christ, you don't grieve, you don't agonize over this as somebody with no hope. So this will all, one day, God, you know, one day it's going to be a distant memory. It'll be a minor blip on the radar screen at best. And we have so much more to look forward to than what we have to endure today. And that momentary challenge turns into an eternal weight of glory as you read in the scriptures. And that's what, for me personally, that's what helps me to keep my joy of the Lord, is to keep that eternal perspective and remember God's promises and read God's promises often to juxtapose against all the garbage and frustrating things that we have to deal with in the here and the now. But one of those things that is not difficult for me to deal with every week is my good friend David Fisher from Landmark Capital. We've got a little Money Monday update we're going to do today. David, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I would say the same sentiment I have towards my dear brother, you.
Amen.
Thank you for our friendship.
It's been great. I really thank God for you and your friendship and your support and you and your wife and your whole staff at Landmark Capital. It's been a great blessing to this radio show and especially to me personally. Well, when we do the little Money Monday updates, this is a great aspect. I really appreciate you doing this. We always start with a biblical application or an admonishment from the great book of Romans, really this incredible theological treatise in the New Testament. Romans 12:9. Let's start there.
My favorite book of the Bible, Romans 12:9. Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil and cling to what is good. So those three principles, love, hate, and clinging. Love, such a powerful word.
Oh,
it will change. It changes countries. It changes our perception of life, and it changes a person's decision on where they're going to spend eternity. And love was shown through the cross, obviously. So we need to love what is sincere. And the challenge that we face economically is trying to figure out what that is.
Right.
That's
okay.
One reason why you and I talk. The other thing is, you know, we come to find out that things aren't really what they are to be. And we kind of hate that evil thing that happens economically out there, and also spiritually, that's the obvious thing. But so we need to flee from that and cling to, you know, really what is good, what is sound and reasonable. And that's the gospel in a nutshell. And so today, you know, there's things that are coming out in the news, once again, that we're hearing that will cause us to feel love on a deeper level, which will cause us to hate some things financially, what central bankers are doing, and will probably also cause us to maybe even make some changes in our life to diversify and cling to what is good, some tangible things like gold and silver, but also reaffirm relationships like yours and mine.
Absolutely. Well, that reminds me, of course, and you could jump right over to Philippians 4:8 from that one. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. So as we deal with all the garbage that exists, whether it's financial or all the other stuff we talk about on this show, we need to go back and cling to those things. Whatever reflects God well, and especially his love, his forgiveness, his grace, and hopefully that's also showing up in our daily lives. Man, that's what we need to cling to. Hating what is evil because of what it does to the image of God, what it does to individuals created in the image of God, but clinging to what is good because there's not a lot of that around us, and so we need to really make sure we got to be intentional about that, David. So thanks for the reminder and for bringing that up. Well, we'll jump across the pond as we often do with a little Money Monday update. By the way, again, we're talking to my friend David Fisher from Landmark Capital. LandmarkGold.com is the website. Incredible source of information and education. That's all they want to do for you, to serve you, is to educate you and give you information so that you can make a sound decision. Or you can give them a call even right now during the show, 844-879-8882, the staff over at Landmark Capital. But Italian banks, we talked about them. They were previously in trouble, and now the Bank of England. So this it just looks like it's spreading over there. What's going on, David?
Well, it's called systemic risk, and that's what brought down the system globally. Banks are interconnected, but the Bank of England gave out over the weekend a dire warning saying that we're having a bigger systemic risk now than we were having in 2008. And the arm of the Bank of England called the PRA, Prudential, nothing to do with Prudential here in our country, that insurance company, but the Prudential Regulation Authority, they're also sent out a warning, and what they're giving stark warnings that we're way out of whack, the banking industry in England. And, you know, they cited all the other banks around the world that were interconnected, and this could be the domino effect that could trigger this. But this has happened in just less than a week. The two bodies issued papers and speeches warning banking industry and industry members that they're showing signs of making the same, I'm reading from the report, the same mistakes that led to the 2008 financial crisis, the outcome which predicted the worst than what we've seen in just 9 years. It's all happened again. And they're concluding that the European bond market, the corporate bond market, could create more instability during the next financial crisis shock than that did of the crisis of 2008. And the chief executive officer, Sam Woods, for the PRA, is telling lenders that they're on thin ice with their thing they call the balance sheet shenanigans, that they are manipulating the books again, called innovations, which is the very thing that they caused the run-up and the exaggerated financial crisis of 2008, and he's saying they got to stop that nonsense.
Yeah, and I'm glad you used the word systemic, because that is the problem. That we think it's just Lehman Brothers and what happened here in the U.S. No, this is systemic. It's around the world. which is why we talk about these things and try to get ourselves prepared. And in using precious metals as a balance to your portfolio is what David is trying to educate us about. And again, you can contact him at landmarkgold.com. But, you know, the markets are kind of flat. I'm looking at a five-day average. It hasn't done much in the last 5 days. It was flat, just down just a little bit today. Anything going on the horizon this week, David, that we need to pay attention to?
Well, the big thing this week in the United States is earnings. We're at near record levels. Investors are waiting for big U.S. companies, Steve, to report what you call quarterly earnings. And you put into perspective, earnings are being closely watched because we have high valuations, which are trying to be justified in the face of tepid inflation and a recent patch, a mixed economic data saying that the market might be overvalued. But historically, the S&P 500 trades at 15 times its earnings. Right now, we're at 18 times its earnings. So it's overvalued in the criteria of the yardstick, which this is one leg stool that the equity market is standing strongly on. If they don't report earnings this week, and I think the earnings are going to come out in a positive way, not a negative way, but it's not going to be phenomenal. But I think earnings are going to be less than what they were in 2011. But moving forward, that's going to be a big challenge because we're moving into a brand new era, which we're going to talk more about in the next coming weeks, what this new era of investing might look like because of the Fed's balance sheet and selling treasuries and all those things. So,
yeah, we're going to talk about what Janet Yellen said last week before Congress, who's, of course, the Fed chairwoman. We'll talk about that. But speaking of the market, it seems like every week you got another highly respectable, like a hedge fund manager or CEO, warning about a coming crash and another correction that could be even bigger than 08. Any new ones this week, David?
Goldman Sachs joins the list. Deutsche Bank joins the list. Morgan Stanley joins the list.
Jeez.
I can keep going. How about Ray Diallo? He's the chairman of Bridgewater Associates. Last week, he wrote in his economic report saying that we're heading towards a new stage where markets will not get the same level of support from global monetary policymakers, and the market could correct. We are moving into an era that we are at the end of a long-term debt supercycle, he calls it. And the restructuring of this debt and the entitlement, he's talking about the Fed and also the government, is going to put a squeeze on the market. So we're moving into a brand new area, and he says that this time we have no ammo. The Fed has no ammo to fix us from going into a recession. And historically, when they start raising rates, yeah, that's the next thing that precludes a recession. So he's calling for a recession, actually, not just a pullback in the market.
Now, what about we talk about government debt all the time and the long-term trend of that, which is red, 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 red. Any other things that are kind of unmanageable on the government's side that we need to be looking at in terms of a financial crisis?
Well, the obvious that I mentioned last week, the House Appropriations Committee, our government is not working, and they were supposed to pass 12 spending bills by last April 15th, so we can have a budget coming up at the end of September. Our government isn't working, and Jamie Dimon, who's the highly successful chief executive officer for J.P. Morgan, came out this week and said that Washington is dysfunctional, and still the U.S. economy still laggards and delivers annual growth of 1.5% to 2%, but he's saying that's all getting ready to change. He's saying that America and its allies has been gone from looking at this situation from a curiosity and amusement to now confused and concerned.
Wow.
The world is now wandering to looking at America, saying if we're going to get our political house in order along with our financial house. And he's saying the outcome, if we don't get our political house in order, the financial house can't get in order. And Jamie Dimon rang the alarm bell last week for a very loud time. Saying we got to get with this,
man.
Picture.
Well, when we come back next Monday, I want to make sure we talk about what Janet Yellen said last week as the Fed chairwoman. She was talking about lowering the Fed's balance sheet because there's some things about that statement that we need to look into. Of course, we'll look at what happens between now and then. But David, remind everybody how they can get a hold of you and your excellent staff.
They can call us at 844-879-8882 or go to our website at landmarkgold.com.
Okay, buddy, thanks for joining us again today. And we're going to stay on with David on Facebook Live and pray about my procedure tomorrow. So if you guys can remember to pray for me tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern, trying to get my voice problems under control. God willing, I'll talk to you guys again real soon.